All right, here we go. Episode 9 and 10 of Mozart in the Jungle. Haley, she's got her own journey. And then we got Rodrigo with his own journey. And I, as a person, as a human, don't even know what to make of it sometimes. I love when we have the intersection of creativity, but then also the human interaction of love and how you move on from that. And out of all the AfterBuzz shows that I've ever done, Mozart in the Jungle just takes me to a certain place, and I'm very glad that we're going to take you to the end. Season 4, episode 9 and 10. Let's get into the after show right now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Ah.
The familiar song.
Take it in a little bit. Take it in a little bit.
I'm a little sad.
Absolutely. How could you not be? Anybody who was invested in this show from season one and where it went, season two, three, and four. Four was that healthy mix of relationship also that we hadn't really seen. Mm-hmm. So much of it in the earlier seasons were... you know, how we negotiate creativity with the business side of it. And sometimes art does get compromised in that way.
Yeah.
So when you have all of those elements that we love from season one, two, and three, and then you mix them together with a relationship, almost challenging to watch because it was so darn good. One of the favorite shows that I enjoy doing here at AfterBuzz. So let's start right now. Kind of going to be goofy because I'm bummed it's over. But anyways, first of all, my name is Ronnie Jr. And I've got one of the strongest co-hosts you'll ever find.
Aw, that's very kind. Linda Entwee.
And we also have our third co-host, which you will not see his face, but you will hear his angelic voice in the booth we have tonight.
What's up, everybody? My name is Anthony Becerra, and I am the eye in the sky.
I feel like that. He was about to start rapping for a minute, but nonetheless, Anthony, thank you. We love that you are the engineer because you watched the show. What are yours and Linda's overall thoughts of moving out of those two really strong episodes, being 7 and 8, and now we have our conclusion?
Deflation. Also, I'm just, I feel like Rodrigo got the short end of the stick as to, like, the writing-wise, as to where he was heading. But I think that's okay, because I think they're setting him up for, like, a season 5 exploration for sure. And Haley was at the right, is just in the right spot, and I can't wait to see where she goes from there. Overall thoughts, it was fantastic. I enjoyed these episodes.
Yeah, I agree. I think that... definitely season 4 was all about Haley and her growth, and I think that was important contrast because season 1, 2, and 3 has always been about Rodrigo. So it was nice to see her flourish and finally get what she wanted and what she's been driving herself for. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, the relationship stuff took a side note.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen versions of this story on, you know, movies and other TV programs or whatnot, but never done in this way. And I was very proud of seeing where Haley resulted by the ending. Sort of caught me off guard in a surprise. It was really healthy and strong. And, you know, this season had a lot of women empowerment issues or things that she had to address. So just when you have that second chance, which we'll talk about a little bit in episode 10, that's amazing. And I think it was very inspiring for our own personal lives because, you know, it's kind of like that theory of life goes on, you know. So whatever your hiccup is, you do have that second chance. But that's not till episode 10, which is called Dance. We'll do that in a second. Linda also has news and gossip. And of course, I want to tell you about a really fun podcast too. But we might as well dive so quickly into episode 9, which is I Want You to Think of Me. And this is coming off of us watching this heartbeat moment of this tea ceremony that sort of changed the game. Now, I don't know how you guys watched it, but us three, Anthony, Linda, and myself, we watched it each double episode at a time. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, mm-hmm. you know, and so on. And so I was so excited to get back into the viewing of it because this left me hanging like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
We start off on I Want You to Think of Me was episode number 9 with the youth orchestra. We see a blip of that. My big takeaway from that portion of the opening portion of the show is that Rodrigo just wasn't really ready to start dealing with anything. He was throwing himself into everything, but he wasn't exactly present. You know, he was with the youth orchestra. He was go, 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 as always. He also referred to Maestro Rivera quite a bit, and he was giving the explanation of what Play with the Blood was to the youth orchestra. Linda, what I thought was... Yes. Do you have a note?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's episode 10.
No, no. We revisit it too, but in the beginning of I Want You to Think of Me, episode 9, we start with it just briefly. Because this is the moment that he says, oh, do you guys want to know what Play with the Blood means? And it was a story about Maestro Rivera. But the funniest thing, though, is that he didn't say the same story that he's been telling. He's always said Play with the Blood meant love. But in this way that he was reciting it, he started to say Play with the Blood was more of, you know, with the fingers, because the fingers had got damaged. The only reason I really bring that up is because it made me think he's been using this term Play with the Blood because it meant love when Haley was so prominent in his life. The moment Haley's not prominent in his life, he's now saying Play with the Blood was sort of some other thing with Maestro Rivera and how his hands physically, you know, had gotten hurt. I just thought that was the funniest thing, you know, as far as him not taking ownership of what was going on. Like I said, just a very brief blip of that, so we don't really have to stop down too much on that. Linda, I wanted to talk a little bit about Gloria and Thomas.
Yeah.
So we have Gloria and Thomas negotiating Hesby's peace. I thought that was fun to watch.
Yeah, I thought that was a great way to reintroduce them back to New York. So, like you said, they're coming back from Japan, and then Gloria walks into her office. Thomas and Hess are there, and they're basically fighting for this premiere piece.
Yeah, and I'm loving Hesby and his... wild side and his, because, you know, I had watched the episode and I didn't realize until a little bit later that everything that Hesby, maybe you've already mentioned this in the last episode, but everything that Hesby says about his piece and how he was sort of complicated with it and he brought it to the grand piano and it was in all these little napkins. That, to me, when the series was all said and done, I was like, oh, that represents everything that Thomas has always been saying, that good performance, you know, good aspect of performance is going to be within destruction. Mm. It's just something I pieced together at the end. I was like, right. Oh, how funny that they kind of match.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you almost look at Hesby as like kind of a crazy guy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But that's what Thomas has been instilling in everybody. He instills it in Haley, maybe just in a different way.
Right.
We also have Gloria and Thomas basically call it quits, and that's based on who is going to take the piece, who's going to actually take the Hesby piece. And I think also Gloria felt she felt disrespected, but she also felt like, you know, Thomas was going behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they both went behind each other's back, though.
Felt a little betrayed, I guess.
Yeah. But it resulted in them wanting to sort of call it quits. But I did love the scene, you guys. I loved when Gloria, in her classic, like, let me just get things done, because she is the executive director, mm-hmm. and she's so used to problem solving. She almost doesn't think on emotion. She almost just thinks on problem solving. Okay, this is a problem. Bam, I'm going right to the Guggenheim. Oh, but I loved seeing Thomas track her down, and I'm sure you two did as well. That was so cute.
Yeah, it was really cute. An important moment for me in this episode was when Gloria takes both Thomas and Hess down for a walk to Rodrigo. And Rodrigo's still shaken up from the breakup in Japan, and he's struggling to get the orchestra to play With the Blood. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was funny because in that moment, Hesby thought that music that he was playing or conducting was amazing. He called it a dystopian nightmare. And it's what he wants his own music to portray because it's terrifying. But what was crazy is that Rodrigo wasn't doing this on purpose. He was just so broken that he wasn't in the moment. Mm. And that, I thought, was a big moment for this episode.
You're actually right, and I'm glad we spent more time on that because, yeah, that was the moment that everything did seem like it would go in the favor that it should have went.
Right.
But Rodrigo openly said, no, I'm not even ready for the piece.
Yeah, he says, give it to Thomas, and Thomas is kind of like, yeah, give it to me. And then in that moment, she breaks up with him over the Hesby thing.
Yeah, because it was important to her, but I think, like, the bigger thing is it was important for people who are going to have the integrity with the piece, and that's Rodrigo saying, I'm not good for it, you know? And that's the one thing that we always can be really happy with Rodrigo, even though he's shaky-bakey on a lot of things and his decisions. If it doesn't speak to him, he's going to make not a rash decision, but he's going to make a decision.
Rash decision.
Yeah, because he sees people. Because he sees Mozart and all these people. So you're right. That really did piss her off. And that's why I think she did have that, you know, bolt right over to Guggenheim, because that was sort of how she that rationalized it.
Correct. And then another important component was seeing Haley and Lizzie having this box wine street sidewalk party. And it's the first time they're talking about Rodrigo, and realizing that, hey, they haven't spoken since Japan. And we hear Rodrigo say, when he was talking to Gloria, hey, I've been calling from everyone's phone. She's not answering. And there's a reason why she's ignoring him. And so that... those two contrasts from coming back from Japan, Haley just not doing anything, and Rodrigo conducting, but conducting poorly, that sets up the entire episode 9 and 10.
Yeah, how they, like, handled the same issue, but they handled it completely different.
And where they end up.
And well, within even what you're saying about Lizzie and them being outside of the apartment and just enjoying, you know, the sisterhood of the friendship, which I love, because we all do, because Lizzie is so honest with Haley. We also find out in that moment that it's weird because, well, it's not weird, but we do find out that there is a need for a sub oboist. So it's almost like we're going back to season one in some ways.
Yep.
How did you guys feel about that? Were you prepared to see Haley jump right into it? Did it seem like classic Haley, or did it seem like how did you guys take that?
I thought that Haley wanted, like she said, she wanted some normality and she wanted to go back to how things were. So it made absolute sense that she would sub as a oboe, because that's what she was doing before all of this conducting and travel and relationships and all of that.
Yeah. And we all know normalcy, you know, Anthony, with whatever relationships you've had and stuff. It's just like, it's so hard to just click back into normalcy. So, like, as you said, it sort of set up the episode, because watching it, I'm like, is she really strong and confident enough to just be like, I'm fine? Because Lizzie called it out. Lizzie was like, no, you're going to be in the orbit. That's bad. And she's like, no, I got this. And I'm like, but do you?
And that's the whole thing.
Let's unpack a little bit about Rodrigo in the episode too. But one other quick note I wanted to mention with Thomas and Gloria, there was, as we were talking about, a little bit of a ping pong with the Hesby piece and then her going to the Guggenheim and then Thomas coming after her saying, you know, I need you to fight, which was really inspiring for her. She probably did need to hear that. But a really interesting part for me, though, is everything seems to be going okay, and Thomas learns that there are union violations. It's basically a non-union orchestra with union players, and this is obviously, you know, evident that this is a Gloria move prior to their reconnection. But at the same time, it really leaves Thomas completely out of the situation. And what was it? Betty was like, "I'm not no damn scab," which I appreciate, you know, because we always sort of try to represent for the unions. At least that's how I feel. So I obviously wouldn't want any type of union infraction, you know,
right.
Especially within the arts. And we've seen Union Bob throughout these seasons. We've seen in episode 10, the younger girl talking about the things from the youth orchestra, talking about the things that are, you know, she needs her bathroom break, this, that, and the other. So the values are intact. And it just seemed like a sort of petty move for Gloria to do that. But that's where they were at in their relationship.
Well, I don't know if it was petty. I think that... what that scene came from was when she, like you said, she takes the job and Thomas finds her and he says, I come at you and you come at me. That's how this works. And he convinces her that he needs her and that her opposing view on music and his is what's been helping innovate not only the New York Symphony, but the Brooklyn Symphony. And this war is good for both of them, not just good it's good for both of them, but it's also good for music and the advancement of music. So that was a major point. So when she called the anonymous tip-in, he was pissed, but he was also happy because she was fighting, and that's exactly what he wanted.
Challenge. That's what I'm saying. It's like Thomas just represents discomfort, and that is the way you're going to have your artistic integrity always intact. So you're right. That was such a really strong ping-pong back and forth, and Thomas really was my guy these last couple episodes. Like, I really, like, felt the fuel of everything he had to say, and, you know, as we'll get to episode 10, like, he was so proud, you know, and it's almost like sometimes he's looked at, not negatively, but he is like this loud mouth, you know, almost like grumpy guy. And, you know, even when he went to the Queens Phil, it was like, you know, they kind of joked with him. Oh, my God, I had to take 3 trains to get over here. You know, it went within his like negative, dark persona. But he just makes so much sense in the end. He really, really does.
Yeah.
What do you guys want to think in terms of Rodrigo? So what I took from it is his very first focus was the orchestra. The dystopian nightmare. We did cover that already. He obviously talks about the oboist, and he's yearning for Haley. He makes no mistake about that. He's very open about that.
Can I touch on that?
Sure, sure, sure. Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to say this earlier. So I thought it was pretty funny how the oboist wasn't good enough for him, and then he actually plays it, and he says that like he learned through I forgot what that word
osmosis.
Osmosis, yeah. I just felt I saw it as like a longing for Haley, or like trying to cling on to whatever he can that reminds him of Haley, although she's not there. I just thought it was a very like essential scene as to like his psychology and what he's going through, and how desperate he is to have that sound, or in a sense have her back in his life. And he's just a mess without her.
Yeah, it's like on one hand, she's like, oh, I'm just going to be normal and everything's going to be fine. And obviously, she'll crack later on. But at that moment, that's how she's operating. Whereas with him, yeah, I took that same note, Anthony. I'm like, he is yearning for Haley. Like, he's causing problems, basically, you know, because of that yearning sensation. Or, maybe, you know, maybe just doesn't know how to articulate himself.
Mm-hmm.
We have Rodrigo reconnect with Thomas about the Hesby piece. I think we've sort of chatted about that. Let's talk about Rodrigo at Ferndale, because at this point, we saw a couple scenes where Rodrigo was a little bit of a mess, but when he was in Ferndale, he sort of like got back to his witty self that we're used to. Within all that, he's given away all his personal items. It's like he's shedding all the weight from his entire life because him and Haley aren't together. Fun to watch, though, as a scene, but, you know, he started flirting with girls again, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like he was making a quick transition, but you, of course, didn't know where it was going to go. But I did love that scene. I liked it. That was exactly how he would be. He calls Morton Norton, and he's, you know, offering all of these really prized possessions, and it's becoming kind of a little bit of a party. And one note I wanted to tell you guys I thought was really cool was just some of the actual musicians that were involved. Of course, Joan Jett was there, 80s rocker. Nadia Sirota, which was the viola player, she had a really cute portion. I loved the montage with her playing while Haley walked in. And then you have Ray Chan, a violinist. So I liked having the authenticity of these types of people who would be at Ferndale, say.
I gotta say, I love the Ray Chen little scene. She's like, Ray Chen, yeah, that's me. Get out of my room.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and she did have that starstruck moment. She tells Nadia Sirota, she's like, oh my God, you're here, and oh, how did you get here? And that is when she has to sort of change her entire tone. Her tone has been, let's just keep everything normal. So what, I'm in his orbit. But that's when it started to feel real, because Nadia's like, oh, Rodrigo invited me here. And so then we're faced with probably the biggest scene of this episode, their conversation downstairs. Guys, what did you feel about that really intimate moment?
I mean, it was a fight, right? So more than a conversation, it was a fight.
But it did start light, though. That was like the weird thing. It's like they had so many, like, you know, meaningless chip, as if they weren't going to get into it. You know, it took a while to get there.
But in this moment, it wasn't like she was pissed because she just came off seeing him coming into the room with another woman. So it wasn't like she was mad and that's why she was running away. And I think that for Rodrigo to tell her that she's never going to be a great conductor. She keeps listening to him, her dad, and Thomas, and that she needs to play with the blood. And then she basically curses at him and says, I play with the blood. And that moment was so powerful to me because that's what it all came to, this moment between her being an oboist, following her creative life, and then trying conducting, all of this stuff, and she's really trying to figure out her own style and way. And for her boyfriend and ex-coach to tell her that she would never be great was a really powerful moment. And
yeah.
I think it was her, like, shedding the whole whatever influence or power these men in her life have
exactly.
had over her.
Exactly.
Because when she... And, like, the person she looked up to, yeah, again, Rodrigo, tells her, like, you will never be a great conductor. You will never be this because, like, you don't play with blood. You just listen. I took it as in she just cares about what other people think of her
validation,
and
yeah.
Her conducting. But she finally says no to all of that. And she's able to stand up to him face to face. And says, F you, I do play with the blood. And that means, like, F you, I am good enough.
Yeah.
And I don't care what you say, I'm going to do my thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's what she finally learned in Japan when she crossed that bridge and everything.
And it was a very necessary challenge back and forth. Because, like I said, they did start off so soft and small talk. I wrote on my notes, awkward small talk. So it took that, you know. And, you know, when you're saying things with passion in a relationship, you know, everything comes out, but I'm glad that it did result in that moment, and it was a strong moment for her, you know. And I do love throughout it all, there was that encouragement though with Rodrigo, even though it went the way it went, which was just listen to the music, play with the music. You know, that was his lasting impression with her too, after they sort of went through what they went through. So I thought that was pretty cool. Do you agree or disagree with that, Linda?
I think that in that moment, I think that he was saying it to hurt her, but he knew that he needed to hurt her because it's true. She's had these male role model issues. And so just like what Anthony said, I feel like that moment was her breaking free and finally not choking, finally not caring and about to do her own thing.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it coexists together too, because that's what, well, at least for me, that what I took back from it was that within all of that, and I'm so proud of her for having that moment because she is really seeking the validation from these men. It does happen. I felt like it was a healthy space for at least to know that Rodrigo's still always down for her. You know what I mean? Because his lasting words were, but I just listen to the music, play with the music. Like, his intentions are good, you know, throughout it all. And it was a really great moment. She needed to be challenged. You know, she probably didn't know she needed it, but she...
I think when he says listen to the music, I think it's more like listen to your own music.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, listen to, like, what your soul is saying.
Right.
Find your own blood and play with that.
Exactly.
We also see... Now, does Rodrigo... It looks as if he's waking up drunk at Egon's studio. So we don't know why or how he got there.
Well, it's because he went back to the... Haley has cussed him out and ran away. So he goes back to the party, and that absinthe that they were drinking, you see the bottle with him. So you assume that he's binged out on it.
Yeah. And he pops right up. He sees the performance space. However, it's a replacement. This is also conductor Pablo Heras Casado. Who's sort of taking the spot, which, you know, we talk about she needed to have some fire lit within herself, which is great that she just had that. I think this was a big moment for him, too. You know, he sort of doesn't have anything and he sees he's replaced. So it kind of pissed him off in the right type of way for him to say, wait a minute, like, this is my piece. I'm here. He did that, but he also didn't really know his voice. Like, he didn't understand his own internal monologue, like, why he was there. But jealousy works in that way sometimes, you know? Jealousy does work in that way sometimes. Did you guys, what did you take away from that scene with Egon? Because really, the episode sort of ends in that space with a small disagreement with Rodrigo and Egon, and then we see a vision of what we think is young Mozart at the time.
I think that Rodrigo is spiraling out of control, and he's trying to grasp anything that he was associated with still. So because this dance piece was supposed to be about him, I think that he was trying to fight his way back and say he's actually the Faust, and no one can actually play Faust which means no one can play him, but he was definitely on a downward spiral by the end of this episode.
Which made it so lovely with where he went in episode 10, because you need to go through those moments to really understand stuff about yourself. Do you guys have any other final thoughts about episode 9 before we jump into 10?
Go ahead, Em.
I was just going to say, I think we, are we going to touch on how Thomas proposes
to That's what I was Gloria? Just about to say. Yeah. Thomas proposes to Gloria, which is a major.
Yeah.
And she turns him down, but she tells him that he can come home. And the reason that she turns him down is because she's had so many other failed marriages, and she didn't want them to fail. But she loves him and wants to be with him. She just doesn't want to marry him.
Yeah, that's... And it's good. Gloria knows, you know, I think in that moment she was like, well, you know, I'm a little bit at fault too because I've been through all this. So exciting knowing that we're going to get a season 5 as we were talking about. Is that it, you guys, on that one?
I think I'm good, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Well, let's talk about learning, growing, and just being better darn people, okay? Can we do that? Don't we want to be the best people ever? For those of you who are trying to be as good as Anthony in the booth and Linda with the great co-hosting skills and some news and gossip that's going to come up later, in order to do that, you got to get your skills up, your quality of life, okay? Now, to do that, you know that AfterBuzz is co-created with Kevin Undergaro and Maria Menounos. So she has a podcast that we'd like to talk to you guys about so you could learn a little bit more. It's called Conversations with Maria Menounos. This is the podcast edition. Obviously, the show itself, Linda, is through Sirius Satellite. Mm-hmm. So there's a show you could sort of, you know, be involved with. But what we decided to do, all the producers decided to take like the best of type content and bring it to a free podcast every single Friday. Now, if you want to get Conversations with Maria Menounos, that is a subscription. Just go ahead and subscribe for free on iTunes. Super simple. You could throw your little comments and ask questions too. Really, really good stuff.
Guys, it's a great podcast, and you can just download it on your phone, take it with you when you're commuting, and just get some really great insight from an amazing female who's doing just amazing things.
Yeah, what did Nas say? Read more, learn more, change the globe. Well, start with Conversations with Maria Menounos to make that happen. See how all the worlds collide here on AfterBuzz. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we got through episode 9. I'm nervous.
Time to dance.
I'm nervous that it's over, you guys. Now that let's do this final episode. Linda, what did you feel here on this episode?
So there was so much going on in the last episode, episode 10, dance. You know, we opened to Rodrigo back conducting the youth orchestra, who, mind you, have improved tremendously, and it's because they're getting coached by Cynthia.
Oh, I loved Cynthia.
And Rodrigo starts freaking out. He wants to cancel the concert. He says he's the problem. So he's starting to really lose control. He's lost his mind, basically. And he gives this metaphor about crashing into icebergs and how we need to save the iceberg. And I really felt that was so powerful because he's missed the point. And you've missed the point in all of this. You're not saving the iceberg. You have to save yourself, which was really... Yeah. Interesting and powerful.
Well, yeah, and it works internally. In other words, you know, you can't help anyone if you're not actually in a good, strong foundation. And I think it's so funny, you know, we're so proud of where we saw Haley grow. And then it's like, you know, within his, you know, sort of downward spiral, as you were saying, the only thing I kept thinking was like, oh my gosh, he keeps referencing Maestro Rivera, which is great to take for inspiration, but if at the same token you're sort of pushing Haley to kind of not be valid, you know, not seek validation, you're sort of not, you know, embodying that same characteristic because you are consistently saying, well, this is how Maestro Rivera would do it, and that's great because we do have to have motivation, you know, we have to have mentors. But it started to make me think like there's a missing moment with him where he's not connecting to what he wants to do.
Can I give you my little prediction?
Oh.
I think that in season 5, he's going to go back and teach the Maestro's Orchestra, which he turned down in season 2 or 3. And I think that that's why he keeps mentioning the Maestro.
I love that idea. Yeah.
But I'll get back to that.
No, I'm with it. I think that's actually a really strong one.
Yeah.
Wait, real quick, going back to that allegory. So is I'm guessing Rodrigo is the ship and the symphony is the iceberg?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So that's why he has to remove himself in order to save the iceberg?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. That's really nice, actually. I, like I said, I didn't pay too much attention to this episode, but I still watched it. And yeah, that just clicked with me, and I thought it's very fantastic.
And then so on the flip side, we see Haley back practicing her oboe, and not just practicing, but being paid to play for this cat. And she starts having conversations with the cat, like, "Cat, have you ever had a boyfriend? Have you ever left this building? Is it easy being a cat?" When again, it's not about the cat, right? It's about her. And is it easy being a creative person, an oboist, a conductor? Her breakup with the boyfriend, Rodrigo.
Even little things like paying her bills, you know, taking on a job with the elite, you know, to play. I mean, obviously that's not why she does the oboe. You know, she wants to be more, you know, in the symphony or conduct. But, you know, it's kind of like that mix between, well, this is what pays the bills. You know, I have to go to a rich woman's house and play the oboe for.
Well, I think she's just bringing it back to the beginnings with subbing and taking these side jobs. That's what she did in the earlier seasons. And I think that that's what she's trying to do, just to have some normalcy in her life and, to pay the bills.
I think I was thinking that a lot too. And I don't even know if it was specifically this episode, although they touched on a lot of, like, you know, going back to the roots of the show, really. But even a couple episodes before, I think it was prior to her, when things were going good in Tokyo still, it hadn't really crashed as bad as the tea episode, the tea ceremony episode. But there was a lot of references to the earlier stages. And I think this episode and the other one made me think of, like, how we were introduced to all of these characters. Mm-hmm. And like you say, we've not really seen, since maybe season one, Haley, you know, teaching, I think she was teaching the rich kids at one point, and all of these, you know, heavy things in order to make her dreams come true.
Right.
And it's so beautiful to see, because you have to do these things. And it's almost like she regained her dreams. Yeah. You know what I mean?
This episode felt like a reset button, pretty much. But, like, only for the first, like, portion, because then at the end, it's just, like, it's so much, it's far more, like, advanced for the stories. For the stories of our characters, like, where they were at the, it's kind of like a reminder of, remember where they were at the beginning of when you started watching the show.
Yeah.
By the way, by the end of this episode, it will remind you you're four seasons in, and they have grown tremendously.
Except
for Rodrigo, I don't know. I don't know. It's still that one's still up in the air. I'm not sure if he has learned anything. He's questionable, but we'll touch on that later.
Oh my gosh, I love that point, and that is the way life goes too. I think even all three of us, we could recollect times in our lives where, if we look back a couple years, on some levels, we're, I don't want to say making the same mistakes, but we're, you know, we're reliving a lot of things, and we're being re-inspired and kind of being taken back. At least I'll speak for myself, I guess. But then you look, you're like, wow, I'm mounds ahead of where I used to be. Mm. But there's a lot of similarities that connect. And so I think it's a healthy vision to reflect. That's how I took this episode quite a bit. What did you want to jump into next? We have, I guess, Gloria's meeting with Fukumoto and Betty about the donation being off the table.
Yeah, so, yeah, he officially withdraws the donorship because he is not with the current leadership. He thinks it's weak and not strong enough. And Gloria takes offense. She thinks that he's talking about her, but really he's talking about Rodrigo. And Gloria defends Rodrigo. She's like, I have to put my foot down here. So, yeah, I'm not going to get your money, but I'm not going to leave Rodrigo.
Yeah.
Was she defending him because she likes Rodrigo, or is it because of how much is invested in Rodrigo?
How much is invested in Rodrigo?
Okay, I was like, she's so business.
And it's like, it's her choice. Yeah, right. It's her business, and she's the one who, you know, like when I worked in radio, there was a term called the program director. So if the program director brings in talent, and all these years later, that talent doesn't perform, there's going to be somewhat of an alliance that programmer could have, because, you know, they don't want to have that admitting knowledge, like, oh, he wasn't really the payoff that we hoped for, you know, all these years later. Mm-hmm. Yet Thomas is still there, which is really cool. Let's see where we. So Rodrigo is the problem, I guess, in that case.
Well, look what he did.
Yeah, no.
So, you know, it's self-explanatory.
Yeah, yeah. Highs and lows in life. Yep, exactly. But we see Rodrigo meet up with Egon, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this means that interest generated from the episode before is that he does want to participate in the Faust piece. It's like a very interesting solo Faust piece, though.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a pivotal moment for Rodrigo, because Egon says, you're going to do the show. It's happening in 3 hours. And Rodrigo is like, no, I have the symphony, I can't go. And it doesn't really matter, though, because it's audience-less, so we can do this another day. And Egon is like, no, we're doing it today.
Yeah. And it almost seems like it's that question that he had to negotiate, where am I going to do Egon's piece, or am I going to do what I'm supposed to do, which is the symphony, you know, youth and the orchestra itself. It kind of was like him having to actually play out that analogy in some ways. He actually, like, that's how he, I mean, that's how it looked like once he finally made his decisions.
I mean, this is the breakthrough. This is where he has to choose. So you're either choosing your old way of life and the breakdown that you're having, or you're going to choose something different that you haven't done before.
And I'm just thinking about this all right now, but there's so many ways you can look at this as well. Like the whole, going back to the iceberg analogy, but also like, he has such a deep love and appreciation for the symphony, and it has, it goes with that saying, if you love it, let it go.
Yep.
And I think that's what he's doing. Well, I think that's what he had a tackle on in his own mind, and I think you see what he chooses at the end. But I just had a little problem. Was there did the episode give enough, I guess, like, did it convey that language enough for us to see that he's having that ponder in his, like, he's having that contemplation in his mind? Because to me, it just kind of felt like, oh, I'm going to go choose Egon's thing. And he just gives a, like, there's no scene of him thinking about it. It's more like he just, off screen, he just chooses it. And then you just see the scene where he's talking to Union Bob. No, he's talking to Pavel to give the note to Union Bob. And I kind of wish I would have seen more of that contemplation of, like, what he was going to pick to be more effective when he actually picks.
What do you think, Linda?
I agree with that a little bit, but I think that, you know, when he was thinking about it, it was when he was having that moment with Haley backstage as the youth orchestra was performing. Because you know how they had that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
So they had a lot of back and forth, looking at each other and then averting each other's eyes and then small talk banter. And I think in that moment, that's when he was deciding what decision he was making.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I think that was important as well was when Egon says to him before he leaves for the youth orchestra, "You are the most innocent narcissist I know. Stop being so grown up before you get trapped." And that's important for when Rodrigo made his decision to leave the symphony.
Yeah, that was, pivotal. One of the more pivotal. So maybe that's that's another additional portion of that moment where, you know, he's making the decisions even if he's not, like, contemplating them too much. It's like people are saying words to him that speak so strong to him, and that's how he creates his actions after.
And we have to remember why he got chosen to lead the New York Symphony. He got chosen because he conducts outside of the box. He's a forward thinker, all of this stuff. And if you remember back to season 1 and 2, those were the things that people thought he was superstar for. In season 3 and 4, we start to see him get very comfortable. We start to hear people say, oh, you're getting old.
Well, and then you hear in Tokyo, Rodrigo is dead. And that's sort of the symbolism of all of it.
Which is what I was going to... Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's all of it. This is the moment. This is where he really is realizing, you know what? I don't want to be stuck in this trap box.
So it goes back to the vision he had when the Thomas vision pretty much says that you're Rodrigo who says that he was comfortable.
Yep.
And then Thomas was like, dude, you don't want to be comfortable. So it was a New York Symphony that has, like, in a sense, has kept him bogged down and has, like, taken off his edge in a sense, and I think that's why they say Rodrigo is dead, because his edge is now gone.
Yeah,
I think they made a comment about his hair too. They're like, that's the Rodrigo we knew.
Yeah, when he cut off his hair and he made it shorter.
Yeah,
and also it has to do with losing his muse. So now what I'm trying to see is that Rodrigo has been put in this box when he used to always operate outside of this
exactly.
box. So that dance at the end is him breaking out of the box.
You got it!
Yeah, and finally getting back to, like, his own, like, center of, like, who he is as a person.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we've been seeing that the entire season, because he's having these moments where Mozart is like, I came here I think this was episode two. I came to, out of all the people, you were the one that I came to. And he was disappointed in Rodrigo because that was those earlier stages of what we saw all season, which, you know, prior to this ending, that he was losing his edge, you know. And that's, we saw different visions come to him, you know, with Liberace also. Like, everyone sort of testing him because he was not giving us what we had, we had grown to love, you know. I mean, in that defense of him a little, he was gaining other perspectives of his life, which was love. So that's how do we mix all that? That's the really challenging part. Beethoven's Fifth was being played by the youth orchestra. Hesby's piece was beautiful. I loved Hesby's piece. Do you want to talk about it being led up to the
No, go ahead.
No, you could. Do you want to jump in on the note that, because the reason I passed up, because we already sort of talked about their meeting backstage.
Okay.
And another little interesting note is, how about even the young boy, too, he was even making sort of a jab at Rodrigo. This just goes to show how Rodrigo was so out of it and not connecting with people, because he goes, oh, Cynthia, how's your hand? He sort of dismisses what Cynthia's answer is, which was a little weird to begin with. And then he tells the orchestra, oh, you guys are all, the youth orchestra, you guys all look great. It's like a phony connection almost. So then he goes to talk to his little guy, you know, the guy that he's been doing the waiting tables for and everything. And it was that, was it Ricky? I think is his name. Mm-hmm. It was Ricky who was the one who said, yeah, we'll be fine. Cynthia takes care of us. And I thought that was another big jolt to Rodrigo, because it's like Rodrigo sometimes doesn't realize he's not showing up.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was another backstage thing that I thought was a little interesting as well. But I was happy for Cynthia, though, to get a little shot there, you know, because mm-hmm. we've been sort of wondering where she was going to land, you know, within her bigger goal is to actually be playing. But, you know, You have to do different things in your career, especially within the conditions you're in as well.
Well, I think that Rodrigo said something very powerful to her. So these two episodes were just so, if you listen to the words, there was so much going on. So he says to her, injuries help heal things. And he's talking about her wrist, but he's also talking
metaphorically,
about...
Metaphorically, yeah.
Yeah.
Did we have anything else we want to say about the backstage, Rodrigo and Haley? I know there was a little commentary of like, yeah, just keep it simple, stupid. You know, that was another Rodrigo, Maestro Rivera commentary. Mm-hmm. And it was part of their light conversation, but it was a very meaningful conversation. I know you jumped ahead to it and talked about it a little already, but I thought that was another really fun portion of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it did feel like they were both sort of moving on in some types of way.
Yeah.
You know, keep it simple, stupid. And she's like, oh, he didn't invent that. But either way, you know, especially within music, you know, yeah. You don't want to overtrain. You just go in and do the work, you know.
Right.
Let's see. Where do we land
so
there?
So we see Rodrigo go to the office, write a letter, which he gives. He wants given to Union Bob to read before the performance. Bob reads the letter, which has obviously Rodrigo's resignation in it, as well as instructions on who to pass the baton to. And right away, Gloria gets into business mode, and she's pushing Thomas to go up there and do the piece, but Thomas won't do it. He's like, nope, this is not... I felt like he knew that this was not his moment, and this was not about him. The baton had someone else's name on it, and it was Haley, and I thought it was a fun, powerful moment, and it was a funny moment, because when Bob turns and says, I don't think he knows how to spell your name, that kind of broke up like all the bigness of this moment.
Right, because we were reading so much into even like Union Bob's, his eyes and his emotion, you know, with this big moment. And that was a cutesy part that sort of like disarmed everybody. But mm-hmm. I was so thrilled, I'm sure you guys were too, just to see everyone show up for her, you know, with Betty Cragdale coming out of the audience and making that fun, to Union Bob looking at Haley like, you got this. And I think even Betty Cragdale did her classic, like from season one, don't F it up. You know, it was that tough love she'd been giving.
Right.
And it was like, wow, all this tough love she'd been giving was for this moment. This quote unquote second chance, which was talked about in the episode
absolutely.
Too. Oh my God. I could barely contain myself, Linda.
And I think this moment was for everyone. So Betty was missing playing and she got to play. Gloria can now have Fukumoto as a sponsor since Rodrigo is out. Haley finally gets to conduct. So it's a win-win.
She was living, too, yeah.
It's a win-win for everybody, and it's a reset for everybody to reset and move forward in their dreams.
Oh my gosh, I love, this is just a side note, I love Betty Crocdale when she looks at Fuko and she goes, oh, you want to see a little, I don't know what the innuendo, I can't recall what the innuendo was, but it was something about, you want to see me blow the oboe, but it's just really fun and cutesy and classic Betty Crocdale. So mm-hmm. it just, as we look into episode five, season five, I'm like, oh my God, I want so much more from her.
Yeah, when she goes up, tells him, now you're in for a treat. Yeah. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. I feel like I don't know, there's portions of Betty Crocdale that's in all of us, I assume, or at least with me. So I thought that was super, super fun. How did you guys feel about this ending, though? Like, just the complete, complete, complete ending, like the dance that you were talking about.
Are we there, Anthony? Already?
I think we are. I'm trying to double check. I'm really trying to really touch and taste this episode, but I think we are. I'm trying to think of anything else.
Well, I want to... Okay, go ahead, Anthony.
I just want to touch on, like, what got me, like, tearing up was when Haley sees a video of Rodrigo congratulating her and saying that she's the best and how she just breaks down instantly.
Yeah.
I thought that was, like, really powerful moment because, in a sense, she kind of always, she gets what she wanted where she couldn't get it from anyone else. Like, she couldn't get it from her father. She got it from Rodrigo, although he's not her boyfriend anymore. It's still such a valid gesture that she feels from him.
Yeah, because he was part of the vehicle that led her to this place. So
yeah,
absolutely. You know, seeing his genuine interest is going to be fantastic. And I thought the scenes were done really well too. You know, when we see Rodrigo return to Egon, and Egon's asking what made you come. It's sort of letting Rodrigo kind of pour his heart out in some type of way as well. And I thought the scenes really were really fun because we're seeing simultaneously Rodrigo with his performance piece. At the same time, we're seeing Haley just get into it.
Before we go there,
it.
I just feel like there are points in this episode that were really important that we have to hit. So when Rodrigo leaves the symphony and he rides his bike back to the park to meet Egon to do the performance, he tells a story about remembering his first chance to conduct as an 8-year-old and how he did really terrible, but he got a second chance.
Yeah.
And then he says, today is the day of second chances, which is what the whole episode was about, is second chances on your dreams and living your dreams. And I think that another important part before he starts his performance is when Egon tells him that there are going to be no dancers. It's just him. And he says, but I work with people. It can't just be me. I need people. If not, I'm nothing. And then Egon tells him, well, then be nothing. Very, very powerful moment because this leads up to him breaking free and being able to do this performance piece without an audience, without Haley, without the symphony, without his muses, all of those things. This is about him rediscovering himself. So I just feel like we can't not mention those things.
You're so right. And I actually had a thought earlier while you guys were talking about that, and I had that same sentiment about that same line where Rodrigo tells, what's his name, Egon? About how he's nothing. I missed that line, but like in general, I was like, this is a man who's always been surrounded or worked his art through people.
Yep.
But he's never been able to work through his art through himself.
Exactly.
And he's never been able to, in a sense, he's never been able to face the realities of himself.
Yep.
And this dance is him just finally letting go and kind of accepting, like, his personality in a sense, and like how he's finally like, I shouldn't be able to have these people in my lives because of how destructive I am. And I think that's what that dance also represents, is like how crazy it was. It's just how, like, what's that word? It's like a coming together of what his life is and how nuts it is and how he's, you know, he scares people around him sometimes because of just how crazy he can be. And I think that dance is a mirroring of him realizing that he has to go at things alone, and he can't have those people there anymore.
And be able to be comfortable with being alone.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the part that he's just not comfortable. And if you remember from seasons before, he talked about how he never sleeps alone. So this all is a culmination of all his issues. and really getting to the core of what's going on with
and that's,
them.
Yeah, and that's why that dance is so freeing. You know, that's why we really felt it in that way.
It felt very footloose.
Kind of style, like that
expressive dancing of like letting go, and I really appreciated it. I didn't know how I felt at the beginning before we started talking. I told you how I was confused, but now I'm like,
I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm happy where it's at.
I am too. We all want to see each of these characters grow, and there's so much to learn. You know, when you think about like the term that Rodrigo told to Haley, you know, which means keep it simple, stupid. It's like I remember in my head, I said, "Oh wow, there's such a simple answer to something that Rodrigo overcomplicated." And that's sort of at the end of the episode as well, when Mozart is talking with Rodrigo, and you know, Rodrigo sort of embodied all of what you just said, Anthony, and they're having this conversation over the Requiem, and it's like, oh, well, was the Requiem really, you know, not complete because X, Y, and Z? And then lo and behold, we as people, we internalize so much, or, you know, come to these conclusions that may not actually be there, when in the truth of the story was that the Mozart vision was like, no, the reason that it wasn't completed was just because my second or third son spilled ink and we had to recompose the piece. So that was a little interesting at the end as well.
That's the whole point to me of not only setting up season five, but the whole point of the season four. So when he's sitting with Mozart in the park and Mozart reveals the real reason he didn't finish the Requiem, it was resetting Rodrigo. So he says, I was nearly done and my second son purposely spilled ink all over it and I had to start over. So Rodrigo purposely or not has blown up his career. He's in a state of limbo right now, and finally doing this dance and breaking free allows him to start over, which is like, that's how it ends. And
it's time to get to work, as Maestro Rivera communicates too.
That's it. He says, what are you going to do? And he's like, yeah, but what do I want? What do I want to do? And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
So again, I think what was interesting for me is that everything in these last two, 9 and 10, they had double meanings. And you really had to pay attention to what he was saying. But still very beautiful and still super powerful. And I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it. Not being on and binging.
Yeah. I mean, it's always like, these are not our lives, but you just find so many ways to create such a relatability, or at least I do. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I've seen that, or I've seen that issue with somebody else. And it's that common denominator of like where you want to go with your creative endeavors, but what are the roadblocks maybe you're putting? I guess that's why at the end, me realizing that the Requiem turns out it wasn't this big thing that Rodrigo and people had interpreted. I know in my life I've created stuff. I've created, oh my gosh, this and all these problems. And then lo and behold, if I just go with this philosophy, keep it simple, stupid, you know, it might actually be something that can be given a second chance and you could just move all the way through. So gosh darn, this freaking show makes me feel good. Obviously, you too as well, Linda, I could tell.
It's a great show.
There's something I've been like trying to formulate throughout this show as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
I kind of want to go into why Rodrigo is one of the best conductors and one of the worst at the same time, in a sense. Okay, because we all know he's great at symphonies. Like, he's great at conducting symphonies and orchestras. But he's also really great at conducting everyone's lives. In a sense, if it wasn't for Rodrigo, Haley would not have been where she is right now. As well with Thomas, if it wasn't for Rodrigo, he would not have been where he is as well. And also with Gloria. So he kind of like wraps up everyone, like whoever didn't have direction, he in a sense gives them all direction as to where to go with their own, in a sense, music of life.
Mm-hmm.
Gloria is able to fire him. And she sees more promising talents in Haley. I guess that's what's like, you can infer from all that. And Thomas, he touched Thomas way back in the day when he knocked him out from the New York Symphony. And also Haley, he was able to conduct her to be the best conductor that she could be, and brought her up to be able to conduct the New York Symphony as well. And
can you believe that? That is so fantastic.
Yeah, he's
to hear.
So he's like not only conducting orchestras, but he's conducting like people's lives in a sense that's so unconscious to himself as well.
Well, he presents an innocence about him on some levels, and I think that might be one of the things that rubs off and pushes people in that way.
Yeah,
you know, because of his
I just
demeanor.
Think that he reads people well. I think that he knows what people need, and he knows when to push them and when to not push them, and that's part of his magic.
And now it's his time, possibly.
And that's where that's what concludes, like, where I can draw the conclusion where he's the worst conductor
of his own life.
His own life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You're good for others, but meanwhile. Do we have time for news and gossip, Mr.?
I just want to do two things, Anthony.
Yeah.
I want to do the Lola Kirk. So we're going to be on hiatus till who knows when. So there's a couple of things to keep you going if you want to see Lola Halili. Or Haley, I should say. Can we pull up her music video?
Let me just hit this drop.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Oh, well, now it's official.
I love it.
Now it's the real news.
All right, let's do this.
Let's go.
So Lola has a debut album due later out this year called, one of the songs is called Monster that will appear on it. And it's a song about wanting to fit into the world. And she shot this video while in Japan, filming in the day for Moser and filming at night for her video. And she filmed it with first-time director Liz Coy, who is also a writer on Mozart in the Jungle.
So convenient.
I love the sound. Can we turn it up a little to hear a smidge of this?
Love it. So, guys, if you love this, starting in June, she will be touring with an Australian band called Middle Kids as their opening act. And if you're in Los Angeles, they will be here June 26th at the Lodge Room.
Yay. I like the eclectic energy of that sound. It almost takes me back to like a 90s feel in some way, too. And she couldn't be a better person for this moment. And how about that, to maneuver a hit show and then also maximize your time by, you know, having your art be visually demonstrated in a music video during your night shoots, you know, type thing. That's pretty cool. And probably what made the video so darn good, you know.
Yeah.
Did you have any other news and gossip, Linda?
Do we have time for this one?
Oh, yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, so the Paola Prestini. You say it better. Say it, Anthony.
Paola Prestini.
Yeah, I love it. Artistic director of the National Sadas, her piece, Listen Quiet, which we're about to play, was performed during that chaotic party in which Rodrigo gave away all of his stuff. And I just thought it was so beautiful to see it outside of the actual show or listen to it. So really, if you close your eyes, you can picture the chaos. Music is so powerful. So powerful.
I love the way it's interwoven into this series. And there's a lot of great performances also at that venue, too. So that's
absolutely.
This is, you know, very credible in that way. That was great. I liked feeling that after we watched this series.
Right. And then last but not least, Carolyn Shaw, the composer, violinist, and singer, mm-hmm. who we saw a few episodes earlier mm-hmm. in the season. She actually won a Pulitzer Prize in 2013. And the song that she premiered on the show was actually a new piece.
Oh, okay.
Fun facts.
And it just ties so together so well, you know, from the Lizzie saying you should try a female composer and what Haley did to think outside the box, if you will, to go outside of her home and say we want your piece. I mean, just all of that bit of news like ties in so nicely. Guys, what are your last thoughts of the series? How are you left here in this moment, Linda?
Or Anthony? Is that like predictions or?
Well, I just wanted your general feelings of it, you know. But we could do predictions. Yeah.
I'm down for predictions.
Kick the button, Anthony. There it is.
And now you're after Buzz TV.
Are you going first, Anthony?
With predictions?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, like, I really want to see where Rodrigo is going to go. I love your prediction that you said earlier, actually, Linda. I was hoping you'd save it for this for right now. If you can expand on it, that'd be great.
Okay, I can.
But yeah, I would love to go back to Mexico and see Rodrigo just like, I don't know, I want to see him grow out like a huge like scraggly beard and just be all mountain manned out and just be like teaching kids in Mexico. And for some reason, they have to go and get him back. I don't know why. They have to get him back to New York, and he's going to, like, fight him. And then it's going to be like, no, we need you back here. Maybe it's Haley that goes after him. Maybe we do a time jump, and we see Haley, and she's, like, a super awesome conductor on the same level as Rodrigo.
That's exactly it.
And maybe, like, Rodrigo's trying to make his way up, work his way up, or maybe just, like, working a new passion. I want to see if Gloria actually hired Haley for the New York Symphony. I hope she did. I'm sure it's implied. I want to see where Betty and Fugu, if their relationship, because I love that actor ever since I saw him on Heroes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want to see him, some more of him. He's a great, great dude. Yeah, I think that's all I got for all that.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump off of that prediction as well. I think that what we're going to see is Rodrigo in Mexico, back to his roots, back to finding himself. And I think he is going to teach that youth orchestra. I think he is going to grow out his hair, and he's going to reset and come back to one. And I think that Haley's going to be amazing as the conductor of the New York Symphony. I think that she is going to be a superstar. And I think that somehow, some way, they're going to need to work together, and that's how their worlds are going to collide again.
Yeah.
But they'll both be at the same level, like both amazing conductors.
Yeah.
And whatever piece it is, they have to work together. So they go get Rodrigo to come back to New York. Or she comes and they film. Because, you know, they really like location filming for the show.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they all went to Mexico again.
I think it'd be really funny if, like, Haley gets her own assistant that's similar to... Well, not similar to... It was similar to how she was to Rodrigo.
Oh, yeah.
But it's, like, a guy who looks like Rodrigo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh. I think it'd be hilarious.
That'd be hilarious.
And you make the mate. Geez, you guys, those are great predictions. How does one top that? But I kind of do feel that would be fun to see a little bit of a jump, you know, because we've seen so much in her journey. And so for us to jump into the next season just as, you know, the next day type thing, I kind of wouldn't mind a time jump. I think that would be really fun. I think that'd be exciting. I think that would open up our hearts to maybe how does she negotiate the success with her career, this thing that she's always wanted. And, you know, if we, which we all sort of feel that Rodrigo is going to go somewhere, specifically Mexico, but somewhere, you know, where does that leave Haley with relationship? You know, does she feel lacking in some way? Does somebody come back into her life, you know, other men that she'd been involved with, you know, or does that not even become an issue for her? Does she get on this one track, you know, plane ticket type thing where she just goes and is this great, you know, conductor and female at that, you know, which we haven't seen. And that's, yeah, it could be really, really cool. So shoot, the show could do whatever they want. I don't really care about my prediction because I am in it to win it and I want to watch season 5. So I don't really care. I'm down for it. You're down for it, right?
I mean, obviously I love the show.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Let us know in the comments. Let us know what you think season 5 will be about.
Yeah. All right. I guess it's almost time for us to go. My name's Linda Antwi. No, that's Linda Antwi. I'm Ronnie, and I am at Randomly RJ. Did you think that was cutesy at all? Did you like
it? I thought it was
funny. Did you? You didn't chuckle, though.
I know, because I wasn't expecting it.
Oh, come on. Next season, we're going to chuckle, Linda. Come on. All right.
I am Linda Antwi, and you can reach me on social media at LindaSoGirly. And Anthony?
How did you come up with that Instagram, first of all?
Oh, it's a long story. We don't have time for it.
Oh, okay. Well, season 5. There we go.
Yep.
I actually left my... A off. I was like, dude, you messed up. So...
like I'm reading a cue card.
I was like, what'd you do? Oh yeah. My god. Yeah. My name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me everywhere at Tony B Tony _ TonyB_ _.
Love it.
Do you have any other comments for like the viewership and the fan, people online and stuff?
Watch it, you guys. I know that it's a hidden gem, but you'll love it.
That's what.
watch our after show.
Word. I was going to say that is like, pass this on, because I always have a struggle with trying to tell people how great this show is. So yeah. I feel like because people love consuming shows in binge, let's get people to learn that, like, anybody who has a dream, whether it's like becoming, you know, working in investing or you know, whatever your job is, or being a great mother, those principles will tie into this show. All right, Anthony, I guess we got to go, huh? All right. Bye, everybody. Guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.